Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Filmcast, a podcast about movies. I'm David Chen, and somewhere on this podcast, it's possible to say the optimal mix of words to save humanity. I've only tried 862 times before now. Maybe this time we'll actually do it, guys. Joining me today is Devinder Hardwar.
Wow, they finally made a movie about my life motto.
And Jeff Cannata.
Well, I was going to say the same thing as you, Dave. It's been 27 times I've teamed up with you knuckleheads, and we still haven't saved the world.
One day.
Those are, of course, all vague and oblique references to the fact that today on the podcast, we'll be reviewing Good Luck, Have Fun, Don't Die, the latest film by Gore Verbinski. You know, it is wild, guys, that we have these filmmakers who make literally some of the biggest films of all time, box office-wise. I'm talking about like Sam Raimi, Gore Verbinski, and then we literally just don't hear from them for like a decade, basically.
Well, it's not by choice. We use you up to make a trilogy. You make one bad movie, and then you're spent.
Yeah. I mean, it's...
I would argue there was more than one bad movie in there, but you know, let's...
There was one.
I was like, are you talking about Raimi
or
Verbinski now? Anyway, regardless, because they both made trilogies.
Trilogies and then bad movies follow.
Yes, that's right. Anyway, really glad to have Gore back on the scene.
Gore's back.
We'll be discussing his new film, Good Luck, Have Fun, Don't Die, which is available right now in theaters in the United States. You can find more episodes of the show at thefilmcast.com. Email us at /filmcast@gmail.com. Right at the top of the show, I have a big announcement, which is generally... you can sign up at patreon.com/filmpodcast to get ad-free episodes, early access to episodes, and exclusive bonus After Dark episodes that are available only to patrons. This week, the After Dark is going to be released publicly, which is very exciting. And also, I'm just going to put this out there. If everything goes according to plan, it's going to be a really good idea for you to rewatch Predator Badlands before you listen to this week's After Dark.
We're going to have the Predator on? Wow.
That's right. This week's After Dark will be done completely in the Yautja language is what is going to happen. No.
I will also be carrying Dave on my back.
Seriously, though, Predator Badlands not only is the physical media release happening, but also it is out on, I believe, Disney Plus.
Yes, it is last week.
Yeah. It is on streaming services. You can check it out, Predator Badlands. And I just have a feeling it's going to be a good idea to watch that movie before.
Elle Fanning? Amazing.
before you listen to this week's After Dark. All right. Anyway, before we get to the show this week, let's do an email from a listener. This one comes in from Eve, who writes into /filmcast@gmail.com from New York City. Subject line of the email is okay, boomers, a check-in. Or okay, dash, boomers, comma, a check-in. I don't know if she's saying we're boomers. Anyway, regardless, Eve writes in, I'm just going to read an excerpt of this email to /filmcast@gmail.com. This is in reaction to all of our discussion of AI the last few weeks. As a college professor and VFX artist, I've witnessed the birth and rapid changes of such a niche industry. Digital tools did not kill practical effects. Motion capture did not kill traditional animation. Film did not kill theater. The use of machine learning and generative imagery are just tools. AI tools are another step in evolving the industry. If you talk to any VFX professional, they'll praise machine learning plugins and software to make their jobs easier. But nothing will replace a trained creative eye. You can train an artist how to use software. You cannot train a technician to be an artist. I know this because I experience it every day. Listening to your conversation, I strongly feel your opinions are shaped by the media you consume, algorithmic social media feeds, and company PR campaigns, rather than conversing with people who use these tools beyond a consumer application. Our culture has lived through a series of local and global political, industrial, and financial scandals in the past 10 years. I'm disappointed that healthy skepticism didn't exist in this conversation. Side note, I think it did. It's called Devinder Hardwar, by the way.
That's literally what I exist for. That's what I do. Hey, by the way, how's traditional animation doing? How's stop motion animation doing as an industry?
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, it's. I think you're saying it's not great, right?
Unless it's like, look,
they need exist, to be on the other side, Devinder. We need you on the other side of this conversation.
Yeah.
The speculation and emotion in this discussion mirrored what I see in social media algorithms push onto its users. Maybe focus an episode on how consuming these products is affecting your perspective of the world?
I think that's every episode.
I think today's movie episode. Is also very relevant to this conversation. Anyway, yeah. One thing lacking in your conversation was love. A successful creative is one who uses the process of creation to help polish and dictate the outcome. Audiences are connected with the artistic team and with each other when a product created with love is out in the world. Humans covet artwork as a form of connection. I don't engage in social media, nor do I consume significant amount of online content because it's designed to be disposable and manipulative. With the little time I have on this mortal coil, I prefer to prop up and promote artwork that connects others in conversation and emotion. This is why I enjoy your show and hope you continue to showcase what you love about the medium so others can share your joy, end quote.
Oh man, wrong show.
Yeah.
You just want love from me.
Wait,
you just want love from me? I do not know how to process that.
Yeah, yeah. Similar reaction to Vinro, but yeah. No,
I feel the sentiment. I totally feel the sentiment. I also feel like if for people who are definitely abstaining from social media, it's very easy to think people's ideas are totally warped by it. I am a man who exists in the world of technology. I report on these companies. I talk to these companies. It's a perspective that comes from many different angles. And I do talk to creative professionals who are working on these things too. It's rough out there. People are scared. I'm going to talk about some things right now that make me worried about the state of like AI production. Certainly machine learning tools. Those are great. We've already said those are great. Yeah.
I do think, I read this email because I want to try to present a balanced view with AI, you know, AI, people who think AI is inevitable versus, people
Wait,
who don't
I'm confused.
Think
Does this email think AI is good or will not ruin everything?
Yeah, that's my sense. It's like AI will just be another tool. And I think there's probably a lot of truth to that. That said, I don't know if the examples that she gave are ones I would use. Like film did not kill theater.
Yeah.
You know, like
they did.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, theater is not dead, but its relevance is highly highly in decline compared to film. And
well, it has to compete with film. That's the problem. Right. Is that mm-hmm. what is financially successful on the stage now is big bombastic, musical right. productions that are attempting to be movies, like The Lion King,
Yeah,
yeah. So those are the things that are financially successful in the 60s and 70s and 80s, even early 80s, there was a vibrant public theater. There was a vibrant voice on the stage that was talking mm-hmm. truth to power and that was speaking to not just the wealthiest people, not just the people who came to New York and wanted to spend $800 for 2 hours of entertainment. It was speaking to the everyman. It was speaking to the public. And that is effectively dead. So sorry, but that's the case.
that's true of traditional animation. Other examples there too. Hey, these things exist, but very, very small, in very small amounts, right? There's no big push to make more of those things.
I'm reminded of the scene in Aaron Sorkin's The Social Network when Andrew Garfield's Eduardo Saverin is speaking with Justin Timberlake, Sean Parker at the sushi restaurant, and Eduardo Saverin says, hey, Sean Parker says like, we Napster beat the record industry, and then Eduardo Saverin is like, wait, you lost against them, and then Sean Parker says, yeah, in court, do you want to buy Tower Records, right? And I think it's a thing where like sometimes you can lose the battle but win the war, or sometimes nice like. Social changes are inevitable, but like you can have like little victories here and there. Anyway, regardless of the fact that we disagree with many things in the email, we do appreciate people sharing their perspectives. And look, there's plenty of room for hope all over the place, including
there's room for hope. There's I don't know about the love thing. Like I totally get that. That is what we talk about when we talk about the spark of human creativity.
Absolutely.
And I think that is going to be the key to art. That is the love.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Throwing things into the AI, text field to hopefully create a scene that looks like what you want it to. I don't know if that's love.
Also point out that here's my perspective mm-hmm. on this, which is there has always been this tiny, delicate candle of mm-hmm. human creativity, this thing that you could call love. I certainly do. That needs to be protected. And it is under assault at all times. Mm-hmm. From a number of fronts, from a number of angles, consumerism, laziness, so many things that are just human vices and weaknesses that have been assaulting that thing that you're talking about in your email. The thing that's scary is that AI seems to be a tool that will make that assault easier and frictionless.
This is not a new
feeling that certainly I have that, you know, there's, we talk about garbage being shoveled into the eyeballs and ear holes of people. And that is not new. That has been the case for hundreds of years. You know, you could, I'm sure, you know, you could trace back to terrible books as soon as the printing press was
released. Right. Sure.
Trace back to terrible theater. People were knocking off Shakespeare as he was writing his, you know, whatever you want to say. This is not new. What's scary is the volume that seems to be possible with this new tool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Devendra, go ahead.
Another thing that is always assaulting creativity is corporate interests, right? And I think what's a little scary about this is that where are these tools coming from? These tools are coming from huge technology companies who have no vested interest in human creativity or producing good art. And to me, that is the big, big worry. I saw somebody, some like AI booster was like, oh man, AI is the new punk rock. It's the new what's hip. It's the new hip hop. And I'm like, good God, man. It is literally the anti-punk rock. It is the ultimate culmination of corporate interests gobbling up everything that is good and spitting it back out at you and making you pay for generic slop. Like that is ultimately what it is. So that is just my perspective. I would love for that to change.
Yeah. That is somebody who massively misunderstands punk rock.
LinkedIn brain.
Yeah. Or put a different way, it is difficult to get a man to understand something when his salary depends on his not understanding it, which is something I think we see in a lot of people who are super into AI these days. All that said, guys, there is some room for hope. Reading from the Hollywood Reporter this week, here's a little bit of film news for you. AMC theaters will refuse to screen AI short film after an online uproar. According to this story, what happened was there was a Frame Forward AI animated film festival, which announced that a short film called Thanksgiving Day had won the contest. That prize package included Thanksgiving Day getting a 2-week national run in theaters worldwide. But when word of this began hitting social media, some were dismayed by the prospect of exhibitors embracing AI content, with many singling out AMC theaters for criticism. To be clear, end quote. To be clear, the short is not like being programmed by AMC or Cinemark or whatever, but it's being programmed by Screen Vision Media, going back to the article, a third-party company which manages the 20-minute advertising-driven pre-show before a theater's
lights
go down.
We love those folks. Yeah.
AMC came out and said
20 minutes is not long enough for them to really fully express their creativity. You know, that's the problem.
This content is an initiative from Screen Vision Media, AMC said, which manages pre-show advertising for several movie theater chains in the U.S. and runs in fewer than 30% of AMC locations. AMC was not involved in the creation of the content or the initiative and has informed Screen Vision that AMC locations will not participate, end quote. So there's an idea that we haven't heard of in a long time. AMC doing the right thing. And listen,
they're like, this is a place for heartbreak. This is not a place for content, an initiative from Screen Vision Media. Yeah. Screen Vision content in this quote too, like content.
Screen Vision Media does not feel good in a place like this, is what AMC said. Anyway, appreciate people writing in /filmcast@gmail.com. And obviously this is a topic that is producing a lot of anxiety, and we'll try to keep our discussion of it balanced and interesting here on the Filmcast.
Just to put one more little button on it.
Okay.
I think we all three, as snarky and cynical as our responses perhaps were to that initial email, I think the three of us take very seriously the notion of expressing our love for great art. I mean, that's absolutely, the only reason we're here. Right.
Yeah.
So I don't mistake any kind of tone of our conversation.
Yes.
Otherwise, because that is the founding principle of this show, and it's the thing that keeps us going, is our deep felt love for the medium, and when it is handled artistically and passionately. Sure. Yeah.
And when somebody creates a thing that is literally the anti-art, I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to have many positive feelings about it. Like, that's the thing. You put that very nicely, Jeff. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree, Jeff. And amidst all the dross that comes across our desks, every now and then we see flashes of amazingness and brilliance that reminds us why we did this in the first place. So we do hope to share that passion with folks, and that is primarily why we're here. Let's take a break for a sponsor. We'll be back with more what we've been watching right after this.
This episode of the Filmcast is brought to you by SVS. Yeah, that's right. This episode's brought to you by SVS. And you know what? They make products that are kind of perfect for people who obsess over movies the way we do. Most people who enjoy movies at home already have a big screen TV. But when it comes to sound, they're relying on built-in TV speakers or budget sound bars that don't deliver the full experience. SVS makes high-performance speakers and subwoofers designed to bring real cinematic sound to your home. The kind where dialogue is crystal clear, where quiet moments convey real emotion, and when something big happens on the screen, woohoo, you feel it. What's great about SVS is that they're focused on delivering that reference-level performance without the typical high-end audio sticker shock. You don't need a dedicated theater like I have or an unlimited budget. SVS makes systems that work in real living homes. And they back it up with free shipping, free returns, and a risk-free in-home trial. So you can actually hear the difference for yourself with no risk. If you want your next movie night to deliver the full impact, emotion, and artistry you were intended to experience, visit svsound.com to learn what SVS is all about.
Let's get to what we've been watching this week. Devendra Hardwar, hit us up with something you've been watching.
What have I been watching? I want to talk about The Plague, which is this new indie movie that a lot of people have been talking about for a while now. I've seen a lot of buzz about it. Directed and written by Charlie Pullinger. How to describe this movie? This movie is about a water polo camp for tweens. And it is terrifying. This movie, you guys said adolescence was scary on Netflix. This movie is scarier than adolescence to me.
Because what? Have you seen Adolescence?
Yeah, I saw Adolescence, which I think it's very good. I think it's very good, well acted, very well made. Let me say this movie speaks to the horrors that everyone will actually have to face rather than like a singular, you know, horrific event that impacts a family. It's about an awkward teenager or tween, I guess, not even a teenager. They're like 12 years old, who attends this water polo camp. They're dealing with bullying. They're dealing with the idea of fitting in. There is this myth of something called the plague at that camp among the young boys, and the plague is essentially like a thing they attach to the outsider, the person that they do not like. And the movie is sort of about that. It is about basically being a tween and dealing with hormones, dealing with bullying culture, and just dealing with the fact that a lot of kids are dirt bags. Basically, like it really puts you back in that place. Reminds me a lot of the movie Eighth Grade, except if Eighth Grade had like the tension and the music of a horror movie, which I kind of felt like that at certain times. I think of the pool scene in Eighth Grade and how like cringe that was. This is very much that. It's a little bloodier at times. It's a little more visceral, but this movie terrified me, and it makes me scared because I have I have a 7-year-old who is going to be in this world soon. I think parents of young children just like being forced to be back in that world where it's very Lord of the Flies, especially like a summer camp where kids are kind of left to their own devices sometimes. It can be very scary. And also boys are so much worse than girls in social groups at that point. It's all of those things put together. I think this movie is incredibly well made. And the star of this movie, look up his name here, Everett Blunk, does incredible work of like really capturing that energy of being an awkward teen, trying to be a nice kid and trying to navigate bully culture And like he goes through transformations in this movie that I think are just like incredible to see. And also, our modern day Robert Duvall, Joel Edgerton is here. Yes. He's the water polo coach. He's the like moral center, trying to keep these kids straight, trying to keep them from being little assholes, trying to be the heart of the center of it. That's why you cast Joel Edgerton. Bingo. Like perfect casting for him. This movie is incredible, but if you don't want to relive the horrors of tweendom of that particular time of your life, I would say be afraid, because it does get kind of crazy.
That is a reference, by the way, to the fact that recently on the Filmcast After Dark, we tried to evaluate the question of who is like the modern day Robert Duvall, or who is the guy that's eventually going to become who Robert Duvall was when he sadly passed away tragically over the course of last week. And Devinger brought up Joel Edgerton could be that guy. And I actually
good moral center. I agree. That's a great kind
of like, I can imagine in like 20 years that like we think of Joel Edgerton as like this very dignified, wise kind of character. Anyway, the movie is The Plague. It's available on video on demand. Devinger, is that how you watched it?
That's how I watched it. Totally. It's for me, it was a blind buy, but you know, just it's sort of like a horror thriller that gets kind of gross at times, but it is like, it will make you feel uncomfortable.
Very cool. I've heard great things as well. It's called The Plague. It's something Devinder Hart has been watching this week. Well, guys, I had a chance to watch Hard Boiled, the 4K movie release that was recently done by Shout Studios. And this is available on video demand. I was trying to... it was Saturday night. My wife and I, we had dinner, and we're like, hey, let's watch a movie. I present her a list of options.
Has your wife seen Hard Boiled before?
Well, okay, I'm going to get to that. So let me see what was my list of options. It was like Nuremberg, The Plague, or Hard Boiled.
Wow.
Would you like to relive the end of World War II? Yeah.
Did she know about this going in? Was this in the vows? So you need to get a heads up when it's just like, this is what an average night's going to be with this guy.
strangely she chose Hard Boiled. Anyway, so yeah, I didn't that's not all the options, but it was like those were basically the, like, I was like, it was the plague, it was Nuremberg, and Hard Boiled. Those are three out of the like five options. And and I asked her, I said, hey, have you seen Hard Boiled before? And she said, you know, maybe. And I was like, you haven't seen Hard Boiled.
No.
Because if you think the answer is maybe, you would remember if you have seen Hard Boiled. Okay, so for those who don't know, Hard Boiled is, in my estimation, one of the greatest action films of all time. It's directed by John Woo. It stars Tony Leung and Chow Yun-fat at the height of their powers.
Unbeatable combination. Yeah.
And I have to say, by the way, I would strongly recommend the new Shout Studios 4K release. First of all, I am used to watching this on VHS cassette tape with extremely shitty burned-in subtitles that look like garbage. You can't even barely read what they're saying.
I think it's the only way I've ever seen it, honestly.
And this Shout Studios release has a brand new translation. So, like, I'm understanding things about the movie that I never understood before, for starters.
Oh, Hard-Boiled!
And everything looks so clear. In fact, like, I'm guessing some kind of AI enhancement has been used, because everything is so sharp. It's like, wow. Like, there is no way they recover this resolution from the original whatever the hell. Is my who knows? I don't know. Everything looks good. It has never looked better than I've ever seen. So, like, just on the basis of looks alone, you know, you lose some of the film grain or the shittiness that you're used to from other copies, but it looks incredible.
They should have that mode, by the way. The old school mode. It is not filling your screen. It's like a little letterboxed square with the shitty subtitles.
That's right. Yeah, they should have that. Like how on Disney Plus they have like The Simpsons. You can view it in like widescreen or 4:3 aspect ratio. The movie still slaps, and also there are so many moments in the movie that are like, this is one of the greatest action movie scenes of all time.
Yeah.
I would wager at least a couple dozen of such moments. One thing that was very strange, by the way, was there is a scene where Tony Leung walks into a hospital And theoretically, he's about to assassinate somebody. And he's carrying a box full of flowers, like Arnold Schwarzenegger in Terminator 2.
Yeah.
And the way that those scenes are shot and edited is very similar. The sound dips out and all you hear is like the footsteps on the ground. And then he takes the gun out and he like rips the box off and takes it. And we were like, oh, maybe like James Cameron was inspired by the scene. Turns out the movies basically were shot at the same time. The
same time. Yeah. Yeah. I know. Yeah. It blew us away in 1992 as well, Dave.
Right. It's like
in 1992, I was like, what?
What? Like two of the greatest action movies of all time have like the same flower sequence, basically. Very bizarre.
Great minds. But, great minds.
So yeah. I have to say, I recommended it in the strongest terms possible. If you've never seen Hard Boiled, now is a great time to see it. You can go and buy this 4K remaster on video on demand easily. There's also a 4K Blu-ray that you can also get. I recommend it very strongly.
Awesome. How does this sound, by the way? Because the thing about those 80s and 90s Hong Kong movies is like they did the visuals right. They shot on film, but the sound was always right.
I will say it has never sounded better. Okay. I don't know that I would say it sounds good, but it has never sounded better. And it's usually in mono, right? As far as I can
usually in mono. The soundtracks were often terrible.
Yeah,
you know,
it's fine. I wouldn't say the sound was particularly impressive, but it's fine. Mm-hmm. Also, gotta say, love the soundtrack. Like, just really thumping 80s-esque soundtrack. I do want to tell
this
you
one
guys,
has a good soundtrack. Yeah,
my wife was blown away by the movie. She had definitely not seen it before. She's blown away by the movie. We were watching the movie, the hospital sequence, and she literally said, I don't know why they bothered making movies after this one.
Yes. I often ask this question.
They've already done it all. Like all the movies are finished now. They don't need to do anymore. But
did you just say, welcome?
She went to the Wikipedia page for Hard Boiled. And guys, I don't know if you know this. There are some really wild details on this page. I'm going to just share a few of them with you right now. For those who don't know, the plot of Hard Boiled is Chow Yun-fat is a hard-boiled cop, and he's going up against Tony Leung, who is a member of this gang. And I'll just leave the details at that to be vague about it, in case you haven't seen it yet. But the film's initial story was about Tony Leung's character being a psychopath who would poison baby food.
Mm.
Reading here from Wikipedia, when Terrence Chang was making connections to have John Woo make films in the United States, he found people uninterested and disgusted with the theme of babies being poisoned.
What?
This halted production for a month to develop a new story. End quote. So apparently Tony Leung was originally going to be a serial killer who poisons babies.
Mm. With, so come back with Dove guano.
What was that, Jeff? What do you mean?
First thing that came to mind.
Doves coming out.
I see. Yeah. Oh, I see. I get it. I get it. And then due to the length of the film, they had to trim scenes with Tequila and his love interest, which like that is like when you watch it, it feels like, oh, there's a whole subplot that just wasn't in the movie. It's Tequila with his love interest, Teresa Chang at the office. And then there was also a scene where Tequila plays a clarinet over somebody's gravesite. I'm not going to reveal who. With these cuts, Chow Yun-fat, those scenes were all cut. So with these cuts, Chow Yun-fat felt like his character was not very deep compared to Tony Leung's character. So to develop his character more, Chow Yun-fat asked John Woo to insert a mentor character into the film, which John Woo himself would play, because Chow Yun-fat felt like having John Woo in the role would mean that John Woo would not cut those scenes.
Brilliant.
Psychological warfare, baby.
Anyway, and that is true. John Woo is in the film. And he plays Chow Yun-fat's mentor, and those scenes are in the film. So
think of the insight there, by the way. Like, my character is not deep enough. Somebody to think of that. That's great. Amazing.
Yeah, and I just love that he's like, and you, who should play the role? It should be you, because then you're not going to cut those scenes because you're in the film. Anyway, so those are just a couple of fun details. But the movie is awesome. I recommend it in the strongest possible terms.
Yeah, I have that 4K Blu-ray. I cannot wait to crack it open.
Yeah, it's well worth the time. It's so wild what it's like to watch a movie with a different translation. It's like you're experiencing the movie for the first time again. You know, because it's like, oh, I've just seen shitty dubs and I barely even understood what was really going on. And now I feel like I have the exact nature of what they're trying to say. So huge shout out to Shout Studios for their 4K remaster of Hardboiled, available right now on Blu-ray and also video on demand. That's something I've been watching this week. Jeff Cannata, hit us up with something you've been watching this week.
Well, Dave, I see you're one of the greatest action movies of history, and I raise you perhaps the greatest action movie of the present.
Wow.
I had the pleasure of getting a screener for Blades of the Guardians. This is a movie that is available in American cinemas right now. It's playing at theaters. Go see Blades of the Guardian. This is...
It's a while, by the way, that we both did Hong Kong cinema this week. Like, we didn't talk about this.
We just did not. Directed by Masters, too. This is a Wu-Ping movie.
Yen Wu-Ping's masterpiece. This is a masterpiece. Dude's 81 years old, and I think this is the greatest movie he's ever been involved with. And that's saying something. I mean, just pure action-wise.
Bigger than The Matrix, you're saying.
Pure action-wise, like, this movie slaps hard. I mean, okay, right. The Matrix...
Crouching Tiger,
relevant. Yeah. Crouching Tiger. Okay, I'm saying the greatest pure on a pure action level. Mm-hmm. The movie itself is Wuxia Lord of the Rings, right? It's it's fun adventure tale with a bunch of wacky characters that go on a big quest. Do they like each other? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. You know, it's delightful. A movie. The movie itself, like the plot, the narrative, fun. Not moving the needle in particular for
me. It's not story-wise.
You know, story-wise.
Yeah.
But on an action level, this movie goes so hard so often. It is I lost count of the number of action sequences there. It's a 2-hour movie. And I would say an hour and 45 minutes of it is action.
Wow.
I'm exaggerating slightly. Yeah. But it is, you know, it is a lot of action, and these sequences are so bonkers. By the way, Jet Li's in this movie.
Amazing.
He's back, baby.
Is he looking good? How's he looking?
He looks so good. He does stuff. He's full Jet Li in this movie.
Amazing.
So there's an action sequence that takes place on a like oil field, like an oil, you know, the kind of place where if you dig slightly, oil will bubble up from the ground. And then fire is introduced, and it is just gobsmackingly amazing. There is another action sequence that takes place inside a sandstorm that I was like, how did they even do this? How did they do this? And that is like the middle of the movie, and it keeps one-upping itself. It is so audacious. Like this feels like... This, first of all, it feels like a celebration of Hong Kong cinema. No spoilers, but there is like a post-credits sequence where the director and some of the most famous Hong Kong action directors of all time have a little cameo. And it feels like they're saying like, it's like, we're all old guys and we're all old and we've been doing it a long time. And there's just like this love and camaraderie that just permeates the whole project. It feels like this culmination of a life's work. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, it feels like a dude that if I'm going out, I'm going out hard. You know, I'm going out big. I'm leaving it all on the screen. I'm just throwing every crazy idea I could possibly have. I'm getting the gang back together. We're doing it one last time. And, you know, this one, we're pulling out all the stops. And that's just how this movie feels. It is so much fun. If you love martial arts, if you love action films and action filmmaking, I'm hard pressed to this is kind of how I felt when I saw the last John Wick movie, where it just felt like every single sequence is bigger, more audacious, more insane. Like, how do we even do this? And it just keeps going and going and going. And I don't know how, you know, I don't know how many days of filming this took. But I'm exhausted having watched it. It was, and I went back. I mean, you know, I was fortunate that I had a screener because I went back and just rewatched sequences just to relive them and go, this is the kind of movie that you want to own. You want to go back. You want to just watch that chapter. You want to just see that action sequence again. It's that good. I am absolutely blown away by the action that I witnessed in this movie. It's like so cool. So I think this will be maybe Devendra Hardwar's movie of 2026. You know,
yeah, I saw the trailer for this. Yeah.
It feels like your catnip, Devendra. Mm-hmm. It may be on all of our top 10. It's really fun. You know, it's wonderful to see 81-year-old Yuen Woo-ping still doing it. I don't know how old Jet Li is, but he's got to be in his early 60s, late 50s.
He spent a couple of years meditating and dealing with like illnesses and stuff too. So it's great to hear that he's back.
Early 60s. Yeah,
he is. He brings it. They have him doing stuff, Jet Li stuff. It's this movie is awesome. Blades of the Guardians is what it's called.
I cannot wait to see it. Blades of the Guardians. Something Jeff Gunn has been watching. Jeff, you got the hype meter way up. By the way, I love when an action movie is mostly action. I was watching Hard Boiled, as I just mentioned, and they're getting to the final action scene, and I check the sort of timer for the movie, and it's like there is an hour left in this film. I'm like, I know the final action scene is about to happen. There's an hour left in the movie.
That's fun, right? Love that.
Love it. Love it. Devendra Hardwar, hit us up with something you're watching this week.
Something I just plugged in something real quick there because I just remember I saw this in theaters, but I saw Scarlet, which is the new film by Mamoru Hosoda, director of The Girl Who Leapt Through Time, Mirai, a whole bunch of those things. This is sort of like a gender flipped Hamlet, which is kind of interesting, done primarily with digital animation too and some like CG-ish backgrounds. Basic story of Hamlet, right? A princess's father is murdered. She's on a quest for revenge. This movie, that quest for revenge extends into, it crosses the boundaries of space and time. It extends into the underworld. Like it is very much like taking that concept as far as it can go. And I think this is a really good looking movie. I don't think Hosoda's movies always work for me. Sometimes I feel like things just happen. You know, they're not always well written. I think this movie kind of falls in that camp. Like it is a really interesting visual experiment. It's a really interesting take on like the story of Hamlet too. But it doesn't really amount to much, which is kind of funny. Like there is some cool action. The princess becomes this sort of like revenge driven action heroine. And the movie also ultimately asking like, what is all that worth? Is revenge ultimately the thing that you should be living for? And I don't think it actually has good answers for that. It feels kind of pat. And it also has this romantic interest character who just sucks. Who's just like really, oh man, she's a princess from like medieval times. He's a nurse from modern times. They meet in the underworld. He has no depth. He's not really that interesting. And it's really funny to see Hosoda create a character who's just like kind of a one note, just like a unicorn dude who's so great and does great at everything. So I was not a huge fan of this movie. Looks cool though. It does look cool.
Very cool. That's Scarlet. And is it available in theaters right now?
It's in theaters. Yeah. AMC, by the way. It seems like AMC just gets the good deal.
Yeah.
They have Blades of the Guardians and they have Scarlet right now.
Nice.
And a lot of like Hong Kong stuff ends up there too.
Anti-AI short films and also pro Hong Kong cinema and anime?
That's great. Sounds like somebody's a proud Stubbs A-list member.
If only I could be. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. The movie Scarlet is something Devendra Hardwar is watching this week. Let's take a break for a sponsor. We'll be back with more what we've been watching right after this.
This episode of the Filmcast is brought to you by Huel. Hey, can you believe that we're already at the end of February? 2026, going by fast. But that doesn't mean it's time to move away from your goals. Huel is a perfect solution for high protein routine support. That's right. Do you have a high protein routine? Get some support. You got busy days. You need habit building, convenience, and control this year. That's right. Huel. If you're like me and you don't have time to always think about your breakfast or your lunch, if you don't have time to cook yourself something good, and you still want 35 grams of protein, 27 essential vitamins and minerals, no artificial sweeteners, colors, or flavors. If you want to stay gluten-free, and if you want to stay under $5 a meal, you get a complete meal in a bottle that you can literally grab and go, take with you anywhere, stuff in your backpack, stuff in your satchel. Do you have satchels? Do people carry satchels? I miss satchels. I want a satchel. I'd put my Huel Black Edition ready to drink in a satchel, and I'd take it with me. It doesn't need to be refrigerated. It's great. The best thing about the Black Edition ready to drink is that it tastes awesome. They got all these different flavors. My favorite, as I've said so many times, strawberry and banana. I am subscribed to the strawberry and banana. Get them every month. I love it when it arrives. It just takes a load off my mind. I don't have to worry about having something to fill in a meal here or there. I have my Black Edition ready to drink almost every day. I also love the Black Edition powder. This is, you know, a customizable companion to the ready to drink. You can use it when you want something a little more built, a little thicker, a little blended, you know, a little more filling perhaps. I prefer the vanilla flavor for the Black Edition powder. It's got the same high protein, the same complete meal benefits, the same flexible flavors. You can add fruit or nut butter or ice. I don't, but you could. I truly love Huel. As I said, I'm a subscriber. I pay for it out of my own pocket every single month. I love it. You should try it. It's a limited time offer. You can get Huel today with our exclusive Filmcast offer of 15% off with our code. That's Filmcast at Huel.com/Filmcast. This is new customers only. Again, if you're trying to stay consistent, this combo makes it stupidly easy. It's limited time offer. Get Huel today with our exclusive offer of 15% off online with the code Filmcast at Huel.com/Filmcast. Again, Huel.com/Filmcast. Thank you to Huel for partnering and supporting our show.
This week, I had a chance to watch Megadoc. I don't know if you guys are aware of this. This is the Mike Figgis documentary about the making of Megalopolis. It's about hour and a half long. And
so like a quarter of the length of Megalopolis.
Yeah, yeah. I would say the movie is definitely worth watching. I've been reading some Letterboxd reviews, and there's a couple that I want to highlight. First of all, I think it's Patrick Willems that said this movie should be 4 hours long, because they dive into like the Megalopolis has been in the works for decades, and you actually see scenes from table reads earlier in like the 90s with like Ryan Gosling and Robert De Niro and Uma Thurman. You know, it's like holy, but we only glimpse those for like seconds, right? It's not like we get a huge, so this really needs to be like its whole, there needs to be the Last Dance version of Francis Ford Coppola's life showing the making of Megalopolis. That said, what is here is quite interesting. And there is one review that I really just, I can't stop thinking about this Letterboxd review by a user named Coffee. Makes a legitimately compelling case for working with Shia LaBeouf being the hardest thing Francis Ford Coppola has ever done, including the making of Apocalypse Now, end quote.
Shia LaBeouf is currently wreaking havoc across Louisiana. He is like a menace, apparently. So,
is actually the most, one of the most compelling things about this documentary, which is Shia LaBeouf, when he was hired for this document, when hired for the movie, was I know it's hard to imagine that it's different now, but was a persona non grata in Hollywood. He had been pretty much canceled. And he says this in the movie. He says, no one wanted to hire me. No one wanted to work with me. Everyone hated me. And then I got an offer for this film. And I'd better not mess it up. You know, I better not mess it up. This is my way back. And then what he messes up in this behind the scenes footage is he is incredibly antagonistic toward Francis Ford Coppola at every step. Like, does not respect Francis Ford Coppola as a
filmmaker. If only there were some red flags for this relationship. Yeah.
Doesn't respect him as a filmmaker, argues with him constantly, like to the point where it actually impacts the flow of filmmaking and people's ability to make the day and stuff like that. And the thing that I just found really compelling about that is people cannot deny their true nature. You know what I mean? Like, it's like his, in his mind, in Shia LaBeouf's mind at this moment, making this movie work, having a good relationship with Francis Ford Coppola is critical to his survival in Hollywood. And he could not do it. He could not do it. This is the scorpion stinging the frog. This is like a thing where it's like,
yeah,
no, he could not muster the will to behave himself.
Yeah.
And that is the most sort of compelling portrait in the movie, in my opinion. The second most compelling portrait is Francis Ford Coppola himself, which I would say the directing style I would describe as lackadaisical. I would describe as vibes-based. He's trying to feel his way through the movie. Usually, and we all know this, right? When you're making a movie that is extremely ambitious and vast with tons of visual effects, you do pre-visualizations, you do concept
art. You lock that shit down.
You lock that shit down. You lock that shit down. He is finding it on set, Jeff.
Yeah. Well, but like we've all seen, you know, behind the scenes documentaries about Apocalypse Now, and you know, like not new, right?
Yeah,
not new that he would just like be completely adrift in the making of something, and then, you know, I think he feels like he can pull that out, and that's part of the chaos is part of the process.
Yeah. It sounds like it should have been longer. Like I want what happened on that day where they shot that scene with who is it on the bed?
John Voight
on the bed involving a boner and a crossbow.
Yeah.
How was that constructed?
Yeah,
how
did he get I think that one short little documentary gives you the titles you to plow through the riches of my Emersonian mind?
Anyway,
yes, in fact what we signed up for. Yes.
Mike Figgis also is not like a super skilled documentarian. Like he does a very competent job, but he's literally trying to figure out how to make a good documentary during the making of the documentary. And he's like talking to the camera and say, because the thing about Francis Ford Coppola is this guy is friends with everyone, right? Like he has worked with so many of the most legendary people in Hollywood. He can basically have anyone do anything. And so he calls Mike Figgis in to make this documentary. And Mike Figgis is saying how, oh, it's very strange to be making the documentary because basically when something bad happens, that's good for the documentary. And that's a very odd situation to be put in if your friend asks you to make a documentary about this movie and something bad happens, that it's like, you know. Anyway, he did catch a lot of bad things happening, and it is really interesting. And at the end of the day, it is really impressive that Francis Ford Coppola made a movie. Like, you do see how much work goes into even the shittiest, most catastrophic of movies, right? And that is humbling to witness. So I would recommend it. By the way, I blind bought this film before realizing it's on the Criterion Channel. So did not need to blind buy it. But
can we even see Megalopolis right now? Is it available anywhere? Didn't he pull it from all platforms?
Yeah, it was available for a short period of time.
Yeah.
And now it's not?
I don't think you can you can watch Megadoc, but you can't watch Megalopolis.
Yeah, it was very strange.
It's funny.
Very strange.
Maybe as it should be. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that is correct.
I kind of want to go back and revisit it. I got to show my wife, like, this existed. I saw it
so long.
In the theater. Yeah.
It's so bad.
Yeah, pretty rough. All right, that's Megadoc on the Criterion Channel. Jeff Cannata, hit us up with something else you've been watching.
Well, you guys heard me rave last week about Nirvana, the band, the show, the movie, and I can't get it out of my head. I don't know how I went this long in my life without being aware of these guys. And I mean, I was sort of vaguely aware of them, but I really wasn't aware of them. And I do think, as I said last week, I do think Nirvana, the band, the show, the movie is an example of the antidote to this AI problem we were talking. This is the love. This is the precious candle that I want to keep lit. It's why I'm going to keep bringing it up and begging people to go see it. This movie should make $1 billion. It is beautiful. It's everything that I love about movies. And also, you know, Blades of the Guardians is also everything I love about movies. It could not be more different than each other, but that's what's so beautiful about this thing we call love. Anyway, it is a crime. We were just talking about not being able to see Megalopolis. It's a crime that you cannot watch the two seasons of Nirvana, the band, the show. Nirvana, the band, the show, the movie is the movie based on the show, based on the band. That isn't a band. So I was just desperate to watch. You know, people are like, yeah, well, you know that the movie is just like a really long episode of the show. And I was like, that's amazing. I need to see this. Guess what? It used to be on Prime Video, I guess, but now you go there and it's all set up and you and it says season one and you click play and it
not available
nothing
in your region.
Happens. Nothing happens.
Nothing happens. Oh,
nothing happened. At least I'm on my situation. Nothing happened. And I had to look and it says, yeah, no, copyright issues means that they no longer have this content. But it like it doesn't play. It's really strange. It's like, oh, this is broken. No, well, yes. Anyway. Somebody very wonderful gave me a way to watch Nirvana the Band, the show. And I want to tell you, it is just as delightful and perfect and so my jam. Just like, you know, when you watch something and it's just like, A, I could be best friends with these people who made this. Like seeing their sensibility and knowing it's so close to my sensibility, I just know we would hang out and it would be great. And I would love
them. You have a parasocial relationship with the Nirvana, the band, the show guys.
I do. And I want to meet them. And I want to, the thing that's crazy, I know this sounds weird and I don't mean to self-aggrandize. I think this is what the Totally Rad Show would be if we were still making it.
Oh, wow.
it's very similar. And it was made, you know, like they were making it around the same time, right? 2007, 2008. Mm-hmm. It feels very much that sensibility. Like these guys have the same love for the same movies and they're doing the same kind of reverent content about it. I won't hold us up as, you know, equals because these guys are knocking it out of the park for sure. Mm-hmm. But it does feel to me
like in the same vein. You're like along those lines.
In the same vein. In the way that we, you know, we recreated movies at the beginning of every episode of the Totally Rad Show. And like it's the same sensibilities. And so I don't know what it's going to take to make this content available. I think you can watch it if you're in Canada. These guys are Canadian based, they're Toronto based. And the CBC evidently has these shows. For American audiences or international audiences, it is a crime that this movie is in our cinemas. And you can have what happened to me, which is I'm all revved up and want more. And I have nowhere to go to get it. Mm-hmm. And that's such a major bummer. So this is a plea to send out into the universe, like make this stuff accessible again to the Americans, because
such an old school problem, by the way, this is like how it used to be to find things.
So Jeff, first of all, I suspect that it's possible that we have listeners who might know these guys or know people who know these guys. If so, and you can connect Jeff to these guys.
Oh, I don't even know what I would say.
/filmcast@gmail.com.
Like, I would send a little note with a little checkbox, like, I like you. Do you like me? I don't know. I don't know what to do at this point. It's just a love fest. I just am really, I really think that they're fantastic. And I'm sure that I'm not alone in that. So I think I would just be one voice among many.
Here's my question for you, Jeff. If I can watch Nirvana the Band, the show,
the movie.
Before I see Nirvana the Band, the show, the movie, is that worthwhile? Will it spoil the movie or anything like that?
Well, in that, I don't think you know what you're in for. I found not knowing what I was in for to be part of the delight.
Yeah.
I think there's a joy to like, oh my gosh, this is a really long one of those.
Uh-huh. So it's the same kind of thing.
It's the idea. There is something they want every single episode and they never get. And the movie is that also.
Uh-huh.
So in that sense, it's like, oh, cool. This is like, you know, the movie version, the long form version. But I also think what's so amazing about it is it totally works blind, going in, knowing nothing about who these guys are and what they're doing. And I think that for me, and I can only speak from my own experience, that was really delightful. And I have seen so many people this week who have messaged me on Blue Sky who said, Jeff, I went based purely on your recommendation. I drove an hour outside of my town to go see Nirvana, the band, the show, the movie. Didn't know anything about it. Oh my God, thank you, thank you, thank you for recommending it. So I do think that is a fantastic way to go see the movie. And also you can't get the show anyway, but boy, I am devouring episodes of the show and I'm grateful that I have access to it in my, from someone.
All right. So, that's Nirvana, the band, the show, and Jeff Cannata is a fan and you will probably not be able to find it anywhere.
Hey, if you have a if you have a VPN, maybe that'll come in handy. And it's good to have VPNs these days.
Indeed.
All right, Devendra, you have a couple more things to hit us up with for what we watched this week.
Yeah, a couple things we're just going to blow through. Hey, A Night of the Seven Kingdoms just ended, and goddamn, what a great show.
Great show.
Incredible.
Tremendous show. Tight six episodes, great story, great characters, really brings us back to what made Game of Thrones fantastic, like that sense of drama and the action. Cannot say enough good things about it, and it is sort of like kind of a miracle the show exists. Like, why would they make this when they are pouring money into the dragon show, right? The dragon show, people just want the dragons, right? More dragons, big budgets. And this show is such the opposite of that. And I just really, really appreciate that so much because the dragon show did not make dragons special. I felt like people were riding dragons, like taxis, like pets just hanging out.
Taxis.
Like, there was nothing special about the dragons anymore. And you remember that moment in the Game of Thrones where we saw like a first baby dragon. Oh my God, maybe we'll get a dragon in this fantasy show. It felt so incredible. I'm glad this exists. I'm so glad this exists. And I don't know like where these short stories go. I don't know if there are more of these stories, but I would love to see more of these characters for sure.
Yeah. There have been three novellas covering the Duncan Egg stories, and George R. R. Martin says he has many more in his head, who knows if they'll ever be written.
It's so much easier to write than a full Game of Thrones book, right?
Yeah,
Dave, Song of Ice
Dave
Fire
said
book.
He saw a dragon in the show. That guy.
Well, I
will say,
there are dragons.
The show is super into like bodily functions. And male nudity, you know, that is a thing. Anyway, that's The Night of the Seven Kingdoms. It's on HBO Max right now and HBO. Devendra, what else?
Real quick, just want to say, hey, I've been watching a couple of the episodes of On This Day, 1776. This is that AI series about American history by Darren Aronofsky Studios and like Time Magazine. Have you guys seen any of these things?
No. I have. I'm not a fan, to be honest.
They're bad. They're real bad. And in fact, it does make me sit back and wonder, Darren Aronofsky, a man who like took like a really simple camera and made like an incredible science fiction low budget movie in Pi, a guy who like took us to a supernova and took us into the depths of space in incredible ways in The Fountain. What are you doing? What is it? Is it the money? Are you just is Protozoa just getting a lot of money from Google and DeepMind to make these things?
Well, because not only that, probably. But it has made several films whose message is environmental, you know, is environmentalism, specifically Mother. And obviously AI is something that's going to be taking an enormous toll on the environment.
He's produced a couple series too, like very pro, like protect planet Earth type of shows.
Yeah.
Even Noah was like very much like pro Earth.
Exactly. Yeah. Devendra, I have to say, I was a little confused by your text about this. I'm going to read the text thread between Devendra Hardwar and Devendra Hardwar, Jeff and I. He said, meanwhile, here's high-quality AI content from a notable director. And then he linked to the 1776 thing.
Yeah, it's garbage. That was my message.
I was like, holy shit, is Devendra being serious? Because if so, this is going to create a big rift on the podcast.
No.
Because I think it's trash.
You're saying this is as high-quality as we get right now.
This is as high-quality as we get right now.
Oh, I totally did not get that. I thought he was like, guys, this is the good shit. I was like, wow, Devendra, I do not agree. I'm not ready to fight that battle right now, Devendra. I'm sorry. I don't want to go
too late. You're on the other side of the earth. You cannot. I think it was something you
I'm so relieved to hear you say this. I have to be honest.
But no, the
I'm
show,
so
it is ostensibly a history show, and they made a big deal like, oh, yeah, we hired like Hollywood voice actors. We hired like SAG people to do the voices for this. But the footage all looks bad. It all looks weird and unrealistic. It doesn't never establish like a setting properly too. It feels like weird music videos where it throws you to close-up AI faces AI generated, you know, fields. It's trying to explain, like, basically trying to give us a glimpse of history back in 1776. And it just feels very strange and soulless. And it makes me very sad because I grew up cinematically loving and cherishing Darren Aronofsky's movies. And I have to say, he's probably dead to me right now. I also, wow. I interviewed the co-director of one of the other AI projects he did, Eliza McNitt. That's over at Engadget. And she did one about the birth, basically an AI assisted movie involving a troubled birth. And that kind of reflected her own history. And that was also not good. The AI stuff in that was not good. I am not seeing the artistic value here, but maybe Protozoa Studios is seeing a lot of money from Google. I think that's what's happening.
Yeah, I would agree. It's very disappointing. But surprised your breaking point was this and not The Whale. All right. Anyway, I'm just,
I mean, it was, The Whale was not good. I did not like that movie, but it did not make me,
I know, I'm
reconsider
being facetious.
Everything.
I'm being facetious.
Yeah.
I'm being facetious. Anyway. Go ahead, Jeff.
I haven't watched enough of it to really bring it up, but it was interesting to me. I checked out just briefly the first episode of A Strip Law, the new animated show from Netflix. And the reason I'm bringing it up is the beginning title card had a little thing in the lower left that said, I can't remember the exact phrasing, but it was made by human beings. You know, this animated show is made by human beings and not a computer or something like that.
Yeah,
like,
it's going to be the new organic. Right?
I think that's honestly going to be this trend is, you know, I think it said proudly made by human beings or something like that. And I think that's what's going to happen is we're going to start getting these labels of, hey, you know, there was actual blood and sweat in this work. So I thought that was cool.
It's cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, Devendra, not a fan of Darren Aronofsky's new On This Day 1776 web series. Anything else you've been watching, Devendra?
Just want to shout out Industry Season 4. I talked about it as it was beginning, and I'm talking about it now as it's nearing its finale next week. Holy shit, guys. This is incredible television. I'm going to say this here because I'm talking to our listeners. Because I do think sometimes
she's given up
when
on
I
us.
Praise a show, when I praise a show, right, it just like reaches a critical point where in Jeff and Dave's head, it's just like Homer Simpson thinking about like just not listening to anything.
Yeah, you have that shot where the camera zooms in on our skulls and there's like a rabbit jumping up and down inside. Yeah.
It's just the monkey with the drum. The
monkey with the drum, right? Yeah, monkey with the drum, yeah.
This show is doing incredible things, and I'm pointing this out because it is rare for HBO to give a show from like unknown creators with a really low budget time to grow and time to breathe. This show is in its fourth season. It does not resemble at all what was going on in the first season, but what's amazing is that what was good about the first season has evolved. Like, these showrunners have gotten better. They have a bigger cast. They have like more famous cast now. But this show is like such a fascinating exploration of greed and ambition and what drives us. And it's gotten to a point where it's like every episode is just like an incredible short film this season, doing amazing work here. Kit Harington doing some of the best work of his career in this series. So to the people who listen to me and consider my suggestions, this is one of the best shows on TV right now. This should be getting all the praise and accolades that Succession got back in the day because it is covering very similar territory, and I think doing it in at times more interesting ways too. Because yes, it is about, you know, the very rich behaving badly, but it's also about people who didn't exist in that plane trying to get to there, trying to really exploring the idea of ambition and how it destroys us and how people live with themselves after doing very, very bad things at times. It's doing incredible stuff. The seasons are not very long. So you have time to catch up to Industry by the end of next week, or at least just get through season one and season two. Good show. Love it so much.
That's Industry Season 4 on HBO Max right now. And that's going to bring us to the end of what we've been watching this week. Let's get to a few weekly plugs, folks. We're going to do weekly plugs. Just a weekly Weekly Plugs is a part of the show each week where we plug something else we've been making. Speaking of AI, I know people are not tired yet of us talking about this. Over at decodingeverything.com, my free newsletter, Tansy Gardam, one of my favorite podcasters / journalists, has written a piece called Does Anybody Want This? AI Fights, Fantasies, and Fictions, in which she breaks down the recent controversy around the Tom Cruise, Brad Pitt AI fight and what it means and whether or not people actually want to see AI content. Check it out, decodingeverything.com. And also, big shout out for Tansy Gardam's podcast, Going Rogue, which, in my opinion, is one of the best podcasts for film fans out there who want to know the making of movies. I think she does a great job there. So anyway, check it out, decodingeverything.com. Devendra Hardwar, your weekly plug.
Yeah, check out the Engadget podcast. We were talking about the Ramageddon, the sort of like unavailability of RAM and how that's going to continue to affect everything beyond the computing industry. It's going to affect consumer electronics. It's going to affect everything soon. And it seems to be getting worse. Like, there are rumors of the potential PlayStation 6 being delayed by 2 years, price increases for the Switch 2. It's going to be bad out there, folks. So we had a good conversation about that and also about the whole Instagram trial that's happening in LA right now. So check out that episode.
You know, when I was about to leave for Portugal, I was debating whether to buy this Thunderbolt hard drive because I do a lot of filming, a lot of media production. And there was a Thunderbolt hard drive that was 8 terabytes. That was $1,000. And I was like, oh, that is a spicy meatball for an 8 terabyte hard drive. The day I left, which was 4 months ago, it was $1,000. Today, that same hard drive is $1,400. So I think it's probably going to get worse. It's like, now I regret not buying it.
Yeah, RAM and SSDs have doubled in price, if you can even find it. So it's rough out there. Buy used, love your old hardware, folks.
It's like maybe the hard drives I have now are the last hard drives I'm ever going to have. Anyway, Jeff Cannata, your weekly plug.
Limericks, to sell them over at cameo.com/Jeff Cannata. People love them. It's a great time. We all have a blast with the limericks. And I hope if you're listening to this, you treat yourself or you treat someone else that you love with the limerick. It's a good time. It's fun. I make them bespoke just for you, delivered by video to your inbox, cameo.com/Jeff Cannata, of course, spelled with 2 N's and 1 T.
Guys, today for the little joke I do during the weekly plug segment, I decided I would ask ChatGPT to write me a joke because today's movie is very AI themed. So I'm going to say the first part of the joke and say the punchline after the trailer for the film as usual. And then we can decide how adequately ChatGPT's humor is going to be at taking over human instincts. Okay, so here's the setup of the joke. Why did the AI break up with its calculator? Okay, so then we'll hear the punchline later, and then you can decide whether AI written jokes are going to replace humans anytime
soon. Here's the problem, Dave, is that you've set the bar so low.
You mean with these little segments that I've done?
With every other joke you've ever used.
I mean, I think you're going to be surprised at how much lower the bar can go. But anyway, of course, we want to throw a shout out for patreon.com/filmpodcast. Again, hopefully, if everything goes well, a special treat for people in store this week. I would definitely watch Predator Badlands in advance of that. But yes, patreon.com/filmpodcast is typically where you can find ad-free episodes and exclusive bonus episodes every week. Thanks to everyone who helps make this podcast possible with their contributions. We never want you to donate. If it in any way causes you financial hardship, you can always support us for free by leaving a star review for us wherever you get your podcast. We really do appreciate that. That does help us get found. Thanks to everyone who does that as well. Let's get to our review of Good Luck, Have Fun, Don't Die.
There's some shit that's about to come down that I can't prepare you for. It's gonna try to give you everything you ever wanted. But in the end, it will all be a lie. Are any of you even listening to me?
I traveled here today to tell you that things do not go well for you in the future.
But to
Tonight we got a shot. There is a perfect configuration of people in this diner that can save humanity. What are you gonna do before we
all go? What happens if we fail?
I really don't like to say it out loud. It's kind of a morale killer.
Because it needed more space, and the calculator just kept pushing its buttons.
Okay.
Keep going. If one half of the punchline doesn't land, just make another one.
Because it needed more space, and the calculator just kept pushing its buttons. All right. Anyway.
I like it.
Welcome to the Filmcast review of Good Luck, Have Fun, Don't Die. I'm going to read the plot summary from IMDb. A man from the future arrives at a diner in Los Angeles where he must recruit the precise combination of disgruntled patrons to join him on a one-night quest to save the world from the terminal threat of a rogue artificial intelligence. End quote. Gore Verbinski is back, guys. He is back making movies again. Very exciting. The question is just, does he still got it? Jeff Cannata, we're going to start with you this week. What did you think of Good Luck, Have Fun, Don't Die?
Well, Dave, I guess you could say what I thought of Good Luck, Have Fun, Don't Die is best summed up in the form of a limerick.
Let's hear it, Jeff.
In a world always offering more, here's a filmic joy worth fighting for. It's weird in right ways. Not all I's should have A's. I guess I now like me some gore.
Okay, Jeff, that was pretty... Not all eyes should have A's. Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I would not consider myself to be, of late, a big Gore Verbinski fan.
Mm-hmm.
I'll put it that way. Mm-hmm. I loved The Ring back in... What year was that?
2002? Early 2000s.
And Weatherman. Weatherman. What a great film. You know? Weatherman.
You're just really skipping over the whole Pirates of the Caribbean
thing. Not a fan of any of those movies. I think there's
any of those movies.
The first one is not terrible. Every other one is terrible, in my opinion.
No, okay. Can I interrupt you on this?
Sure.
Yeah, I mean,
Relitigate the Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
I don't want to relitigate them. I just want to say, I think the first one is awesome.
Completely awesome.
Yeah. And I agree with you that 2 and 3 are bad. However, when you compare 2 and 3 to the rest of them, in my opinion, they are...
Are we grading on a curve now?
Yes.
Okay.
And they also have bad scripts. He was still like knocking out the visuals.
In my opinion, 2 and 3 are a kind of level above when it comes to how talented Gore Verbinski is as a visual filmmaker. And also...
It's not the visual is only part of it, man.
Also,
this is part of it. Though.
Sure.
Yeah.
This is the only part of it.
This is a movie series that was based off of a ride at a theme park that's meant for children and families. And he started one of those sequels by showing a child getting hanged.
That was fun.
And I just have to say...
All right, I changed my opinion.
And I'm not saying that that movie was good or that, you know, it was totally consistent. But you just got to admire somebody taking, basically being like, I don't give a shit about the sanctity of your IP brand connotations, brand associations. I'm just going to go out there and do my own thing. And if a child needs to get killed graphically at the beginning of this film to make my point, I'm going to do it.
Yeah. All right. I'm halfway through rewatching the first one, by the way, with my kids, and they love it. And just like the ingenuity, the action on stage, the way he staged, like, this is old school swashbuckling. And this is why I love those movies, even when the scripts got terrible.
Right? Are you going to show them the one where the child gets murdered?
Absolutely. They got to know there are consequences to their actions.
I also liked Rango. Rango.
Rango's amazing.
The Lone Ranger is garbage.
Yes.
I don't know.
With a great action up and down at the end, but yes. Yeah.
All of that is to say, I love Good Luck, Have Fun, Don't Die. This movie is awesome. I came out of this movie going, so I saw this movie weeks ago. I saw it at a very early screening in like early January. And I said, as I walked out, I was like, did I just watch my favorite movie of 2026 in January? Because we had just come off of doing our
top 10 list. I'm like, did I just watch my favorite movie of the year already? And then Nirvana, the band, the show, the movie said, hold my beer. But either way, I really, really loved this. It's so much fun. Like the energy that it brings, the way it just draws you in with Sam Rockwell just kind of commanding the beginning of this movie. And I was like hanging on every word. It is the movie equivalent of a page turner. You know what I mean? That thing where you're just like, where are we headed? I am strapped in. I am so in your palm right now, filmmaker. Take me on a journey. And this movie does. It does take you on a journey. I loved the way this story unfolds, how we get different POV characters. Basically, it does feel like a book, this movie. You get different POV characters. You get revealing of backstories in really interesting ways. And it is audacious and weird and goofy and fun. I was laughing out loud many times. I thought the sequences were great. You know, we can talk in spoilers about sort of where it ends up and all the ramifications of that, you know, but I did really like the whole thing. I did not think the ending was a letdown. I did have a great time the whole way through. The cast of characters are fun. You know, it's just constantly like, what is happening? No, a new thing is how does this all add up? It's so much fun. So zany. I love, you know, you guys know, I love time travel stuff. I'm just such a sucker for time travel stuff. And the way it's handled in this movie, the pure science fiction concepts of it, how those are communicated, the fun it gets to have with those sci-fi concepts, like grisly deaths here and there, you know, sort of gruesome fun that we get to do because the stakes are just thrown completely out of whack. I love this movie, and I'm sure that you guys are going to tell me I'm wrong, but I think it's one of my favorite movies. It reminded me of, I walked out of it and I went, I just saw this year's Everything Everywhere All at Once. Mm-hmm. It felt like that kind of level of audacious filmmaking. I know.
That's the first objectionable thing you said.
How dare you? How dare you?
No, in the way that I walked out of that movie and I went, mm-hmm. I've seen something fresh and interesting and daring and not afraid to be goofy at the same time. It's kind of trying to make a point. Like all of the feelings I felt when I saw Everything Everywhere All at Once. I wouldn't say this movie, you know, is better than that movie or even is equal to that movie, but it's just the kind of
feeling you got when you walking out of the theater.
It's that kind of like thrill to what cinema can do, what a filmmaker who's sort of just throwing everything at the screen and having a blast doing it. That's what it felt like. It felt like, you know, the second phrase of this title, the have fun part, mm-hmm. is really expressed. Like this movie is having a blast. Everybody in it seems to be having a blast. And I had a blast watching it.
Devinder Hardwar, your thoughts on Good Luck, Have Fun, Don't Die.
I think my main thought is I wish I loved it as much as you did, Jeff. Like there's that. I think this movie is a ton of fun. It is a blast. It is so great to see Verbinski like back in action because this feels actually pretty small scale for him. This movie has like a $20 million budget. It's essentially feels like an indie movie coming from him. And you can kind of feel that throughout much of this film. Like we're not really going many places. These set pieces are not that big, but it does end in a spectacular way where I'm like, that's why you got Verbinski here, baby. Like it's just incredible visuals. We'll talk about that in spoilers, but like I love that end sequence so much. At the same time, this movie is literally the embodiment of old man yelling at the cloud.
Yes, it's true.
Literally yelling at the cloud.
Yeah,
literally
yelling. Very much intended, right?
Yeah,
very
much. We're talking the Azure or the Gemini. Anyway. Yeah.
All of the above. I understand the rage and the visceral sort of like feeling of this movie. This is an anti-AI movie saying all our modern technology is bad, our addictions to it are bad, and it's going to lead us to a bad place.
I don't think it's anti-AI. I think it's like anti-technology is what
it is fundamentally like anti-modern technology. And I totally get that. The thing is, this movie is coming after how many seasons of Black Mirror have we had? Like how many?
Right.
We have had so much really interesting discourse about our relationship to technology right now. So to basically start this movie means saying, this is bad. This is bad. You're bad for doing this. And this will lead us to a bad future. I just feel like I understand what the movie's doing. But at the same time, it feels like, man, can you tell me something new? Can you literally give me something more than just this is bad? And I don't actually think it even has like a good idea. It doesn't really interrogate those ideas or our relationship with technology other than it bad. But at the same time, I think like what it does and how it explores these characters are kind of cool. Their different vignettes are cool. And my favorite, Haley Lou Richardson, who has been in like several projects I've seen this year. I love her so much. She is a blast in this. And I think there's some good twists and turns. But ultimately, this movie feels like I wish it was on the level of a Black Mirror. And it also very much feels like I've seen a lot of Terry Gilliam movies. And I'm going to make something that is sort of a Terry Gilliam movie and kind of feels like that, too. There's a lot of Brazil in here. There's a lot of 12 Monkeys in here, for sure. I do like how it like very much, you just get it. You understand what it's doing. The movie assumes you've seen 12 Monkeys, Groundhog Day, all these things. Like, it assumes cultural knowledge, so it doesn't have to explain all of that. And that's kind of cool that we're kind of in there and we can do that. But the risk of doing that is also feels like, oh yeah, we've done this before, and I don't know if I'm actually doing much new here. So that's it. Like, I'm mixed on it, but I think it is a lot of fun. I like this cast. I wish we could have seen more from these characters, and I hope this leads to Verbinski making more movies, although it seems like it has not made much money, even on the low budget, so I don't know.
Look, folks, a lot of talented people have worked on Black Mirror before, right?
Yes.
So including like Dan Trachtenberg. I don't know why that name comes to mind right now, but like he's been a director. So like Black Mirror episodes have had very talented directors. Okay. Granted. This movie, Good Luck, Have Fun, Don't Die, is like, what if an incredibly talented filmmaker made a Black Mirror episode?
What if a visual auteur made a Black Mirror
episode? Yeah, what if a visionary director made a Black Mirror episode? And I think the results are actually quite compelling. Sam Rockwell is amazing in this. I think he is at the height of his powers in this film, especially the opening sequence, which goes on for a really long time and rests solely on his shoulders and his charisma. And I think he does a phenomenal job in this film.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
It's the equivalent of like a stage monologue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like he's just working the stage. It's so good.
It's really good. It's really good. And so he's wonderful. The movie is really engaging and visually interesting. And so for those reasons, I would recommend checking it out. It's Gore Verbinski coming back to the screen with something bold and original.
We're seeing on the big screen for sure while you can. Yeah.
Having said all that, I do agree with Devendra that there is not much nuance in the critique of technology here. Like, it is pretty much
nuance, though.
It is pretty anti-tech in a fairly simplistic way. And if you want this kind of raging screed against tech, if that's kind of what is going to be emotionally cathartic for you, then I do think you will have a great time with this. If you are looking for something more deeper and nuanced, I don't think this is a movie to go to, but maybe, you know, that's not why you go to the movie theater in general, you know?
Can I see if you disagree with this descriptor? Instead of a screed, maybe it's a movie that's trying to just ring the alarm bell really hard. You know what I mean? It's just, it's not looking for nuance. It's just shouting.
It's a primal scream.
What are we doing? It's asking, what are we doing to ourselves? And it doesn't have an answer to that, but I don't think it's dissecting the problem. It is just, you know, ringing the alarm of the problem.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that could,
I will say that.
It's
a good thought, Jeff. Some of us have been ringing the alarm before 2026.
Sure.
I'll put it that way.
Like, there is,
and there have been things that have been like, really interesting indie projects I've been like exploring this. Like, it just feels like it's a little too late for this. If this movie came out a decade ago, maybe it may seem a little more interesting in terms of like saying, hey, our addictions to smartphones and social media and all this stuff is very much bad and it's going to lead us to bad places. But we know that already is the thing. Yeah.
I don't know if everybody does. but maybe.
No, that's true. Oh, by the way, this was the movie where I said the score. Jeff Zanelli, he may have made good scores before. I don't know what was going on with this movie, but I physically wanted to turn down the volume when this score started thumping. Dude. And it's just like, was it intentional? Like, is it intentionally kind of like bad and campy now? I don't know. I feel like it just kind of let down this movie a little.
I didn't have a problem with it, but I respect that you did have an issue with it. All right. Mm-hmm. Shall we get the spoilers? We can dive into some of these individual segments, right? So let's get the spoilers starting right now for Good Luck, Have Fun, Don't Die.
I thought up an ending for my book.
It makes no damn sense.
Compels me, though.
I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end.
When I buy a new book, I always read the last page first. That way, in case I die before I finish, I know how it ends.
You can't handle the truth!
Inconceivable!
I came here to tell you how it's going to begin.
All right, let's talk about spoilers for Good Luck, Have Fun, Don't Die. This movie is divided into several different segments. It has a kind of Black Mirror type structure where each segment is its own anthology movie, kind of, right? Where like you have like individual characters and characters we never meet again for the rest of the movie and so on and so forth, right? So let's talk about some of these. There's Mark and Janet, I'm reading here from Wikipedia, who are teachers whose students are obsessed with their phones. So
they're also a married couple.
Yeah, they're kind of
on the rocks.
What did you guys think of this one? Like, I mean, Jeff, I think you have the oldest kids of anyone on this podcast, right?
Is that nine right? Is my oldest, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, like, as your kids are getting pressure to get phones, you know, to get a smartphone or a cell phone, like, how did you react to this particular subplot?
I mean, I thought this was, certainly very... resonant. My kids don't have phones, won't have phones. I told both of my kids, you get a phone when you get a driver's license. But they do
have. They're like, what's that?
Yeah. Right. Drive. they do have devices in their lives. And the addiction is something we fight every single day. The desire for a screen, the TV being on and a child walking into the room and just stopping and staring at the television. And like, what you were coming in here to do something and you just stopped and you're staring at it like a zombie,
right?
And not even putting food in their mouths, you know, because it is really scary and not much of an exaggeration to paint them like zombies, you know, and which this movie does, that sort of, you know, Invasion of the Body Snatchers type, the Night of the Living Dead sequence that is clearly being referenced as the teachers are trying to escape. I don't think it's far reach. And I like where it comes in the movie, right? We've already been in this time travel movie, and now there's this other thing that's happening. It's like, oh, this movie is not just a time travel movie. Now we're in this kind of weird zombie thing, and there's all kinds of different sort of heightened sci-fi concepts that are being shown to us. So, I was loving this movie from the word go, and every time we switched POV, every time we were in a new sequence. And yes, I also was reminded of Black Mirror and lots of other things. The movie
Incredibles 2. Got a lot of Incredibles 2 vibes here.
Wow.
We watched that movie, by the way.
Quasi deep cut.
The whole idea of the screenslaver and how we're trapped by our screens and how that is very resonant in that movie. It's basically the same thing here. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I like the idea of the kids being zombies. Like, it does feel true to life based on the thing. And by the way, I thought the fake TikTok thingies that were on the screen were really. Felt like they captured kind of the spirit of what kids would actually look at, in my opinion.
I feel like some Instagram designers are taking notes because they want to capture that.
So that was interesting. Again, I'm reading some plot details from Wikipedia. There is the story of Susan, a single mother whose son Darren is killed in a school shooting. Susan learns of a company that can bring back dead children by cloning, but she is distressed by the unnatural behavior of the cloned Darren. Susan is secretly given an alternate AI that can revive the dead virtually, and this AI, Darren, tells her to follow the man, quote unquote. Anyway.
This is the one that was most directly felt like a, you know, Black Mirror.
Yeah.
Like that, we have that episode where the girlfriend gets the you know.
So this combines
commercials.
Three separate upsetting concepts.
Right? Yeah.
Bringing a dead person back from the bringing somebody back from the dead, school shootings in America, and also companies advertising in AI. Yeah.
Embedding advertising
into AI, into his brain. Which I will tell you that the thing that was most chilling to me was the nonchalance of how people react to the school shootings, right? Like that's
the other moms.
The people at the tech company who's like doing the checklist and
the guy doing the checklist, that's a great scene.
Amazing performance. Just like the way in which he's kind of like, okay, can we just get on with it? Like
you have to
answer the questions, please. You know, like that was really, really on point. So this was probably the most impactful segment for me. Mm-hmm. Was this one, because it's like speaks to something that's legitimately terrorizing children in the United States right now. Mm-hmm. And then there is the story of Ingrid, who has an allergy to electronic devices and Wi-Fi and lost her partner, Tim, when he became obsessed with a virtual reality he claimed was better than the real world, end quote.
I loved that one, too. That's so good.
It's cool, but it's also better than Haley Lou Richardson? Really, dude? I don't know.
Well,
I don't
know.
Yeah.
The bringing him into it, like the fact that he's like super crunchy and like the best guy and, you know, just doesn't have any need for that. And then he also gets sucked in, I thought was great. Having the pendulum as far away from that guy as possible and then turning him into that guy, I thought was effective.
I think it's also the vision of a virtual, there's this tweet that we've talked about, like, authors spend all this time saying, hey, don't create the Torment Nexus. And then tech CEOs are like, hey, we've announced the Torment Nexus. That's literally Meta's metaverse, right? That's literally the concept of the metaverse was designed as a warning of like, hey, in the future, like life is going to be so terrible that people will retreat to this virtual world for relief. And it's rare to see, or it's relatively rare to see that concept illustrated so vividly as in this film, where like, it's like, hey, real life is not, he's not super happy with real life. So let's like retreat into the machine. I think we also saw it in like, I want to say Upgrade, the Lee Whannell movie, I think also had a little bit of that, but like regardless, that to me is a really compelling idea of real life is so
like
you can easily imagine, it's not like one step away, but I can easily imagine like five or six steps away, where society becomes so unpleasant or economically sustainable that people's only relief is putting on the VR mask and like being in another universe. And and I liked that this like illustrated that, you know, so viscerally with this subplot. So the reason I like want to highlight it is because I think we see a lot of there's millions of dollars of advertising being expended to convince you otherwise. Like, hey, going like literally Super Bowl ads, you know, convincing you like, hey, actually putting on the Meta Quest and like retreating to this, that's actually a good thing. Whoa, so amazing. We can make connections with other people. And it's more rare to see kind of the other side of that other than when you're watching Black Mirror or this film.
I had a meeting with Meta at CES and like trying out the new Ray-Ban glasses and everything. And they're like, oh yeah, you're going to be so much more connected to people. You can get translations right in the screen. And I was like, okay, I'm looking at a screen now, but you're right across the table from me and I'm not seeing you. I'm not engaging with you. I'm engaging with this layer of abstract reality that's in front of me. That doesn't seem like it's increasing connectivity, but yeah, that's what they're leading towards.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's the, excuse the term, meta layer of, you know, the bookending segments of Sam Rockwell trying to save the world and then he finds the AI kid at the end.
He exploded his mommy. Oh, no. Oh, no. I felt really bad about that.
That's really cool, the idea that, oh, this character is his mom, right?
Yes. And,
I saw it coming a bit, but yeah.
Yeah.
I wish we'd gotten more of that dynamic because they only literally know that for a few minutes in the film before the movie's over. And what did you guys make of the huge thing of cats? What was your interpretation of that?
I don't know, man. it feels like the ultimate culmination of every meme, right?
Yeah,
it
is literally, that's exactly right.
Cat meme kaiju. Mm. It's kind of like,
it's as AI as we get, right? It's the AI is make a cute cat, make it big, you know, we can put a cat in it. It felt very on brand for just sort of bland diversion content, you know?
That's also the point where I was like, oh, we're not in reality in this situation. Yeah. Like, what is, because it gets kind of muddy at the end. It's like, okay, are we in the VR world or are we not? And like, we were supposed to be in the real world there. So I don't understand how.
Well, I think that the idea is that he thinks that we're in the real world. Yeah. He thinks he's done it. And no, it's just another layer of the simulation that is, you know, ruining
they
everything.
They didn't succeed.
Right.
His conclusion
that
is
happened before. That happened before. The cat thing was before the ending.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's
so
true.
It's like,
you're true. Yeah. That's right.
I'm like,
yeah.
You're right. So I would agree that it gets a little muddy at the end, but I think it's sort of intentionally muddy in the sense of like the audience is not supposed to know where we really are as far as real things or fake things. And I think that's kind of, you're supposed to feel uncomfortable a bit about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, according to The Hollywood Reporter, Gore Verbinski has spent most of the years since A Cure for Wellness developing Cattywampus, an ambitious animated sci-fi musical about funky cats in space, end quote.
Aww.
Cattywampus?
It wouldn't surprise me if he was just like, hey, I've been working on this for 9 years. I'm just going to throw this in the movie.
I've been thinking about cats for way too long. He's the director of Mouse Hunt, do not forget. Right,
I'm not saying that's what happened. Yeah. I'm just saying if it was what happened, I wouldn't be shocked, okay? So, yeah.
That's amazing.
And then I guess the ending of the film is them saying, like, he fails. They fail. And then he says, hey, let's try to give everyone in the world Haley Lou Richardson's disease.
That's a really compelling solution to the AI apocalypse here.
Right,
before we get to that,
is a very anti-tech solution, right?
Like, what if we just we're all literally allergic to tech?
Let's go back to Fight Club Tyler Durden, reset the whole world kind of thing is kind of what he's going for there.
It is funny that we kind of have parallels to that in the real world, right? There are the ticks that are making people allergic both to red meat and alcohol too. It's like, that's actually going to help the population. We're drinking less and eating less red meat, and that's like a thing that's happening through nature. I want to talk about that room though. The room where they find the kid. I love that so much. The space of it, the design of it, that looks like a mostly physical set. The pile of cables. It's so Akira. It's so like that visual beauty. Like that is what I'm here for with a Verbinski movie. And he does not disappoint in that, at least in that scene.
He specifically called out Akira as an inspiration.
Yeah.
You can tell.
Amazing.
You can tell.
Amazing.
So I love that scene and the whole what are we doing here? Oh, it's the kid is literally AI created. The plot is just like, by that point, it's like you can't keep track of it. The AI is trying to create itself, I guess. I don't know. But it looks cool. It sure looks cool. Yeah.
All right, folks. Any other thoughts on Good Luck, Have Fun, Don't Die? You can tell we had a good time with it, right? Even if it's not.
It's awesome. Yeah. I don't know. I'm bummed you guys aren't a little more into it than I was. I just thought.
I am also bummed. I'm also bummed. I want to love it as much as you, Jeff. Yeah.
Yeah, man. That was a blast.
Yeah.
Yeah. We didn't dislike it, Jeff. You know?
Yeah, I know.
We had a good time with it. We had a good time with it. But it's great to see Gore Verbinski back. And I think he is able to bring so much visual flair to even the simplest of scenes, even just the opening sequence of Sam Rockwell gallivanting around the diner. It is very possible to shoot that scene in a way that is boring, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just the way that he uses dollies and close-ups and cuts, you know, to make it so visually dynamic. Just Sam Rockwell throwing phones into pitchers of water, just throwing phones, grabbing people's phones and throwing it, and just like, it's such a dynamic way that you can tell this is a true talent behind the director's chair. And I'm looking forward to seeing more of his work.
He cares visually in a way that I think many, many directors do not these days, or leave things up to happening on the CG end or something. And I just love to see it. I feel like the story may have been better served if it were maybe a little longer, or he had more time to have a little more fun with it. But it's for what it is, I still had a good time.
At the end of the day, it is really impressive that Gore Verbinski made a movie, and we hope he makes many more.
Yes.
That's going to bring us to the end of this week's episode of The Filmcast. You can find more episodes of the show at thefilmcast.com. Email us at slashfilmcast@gmail.com. Our theme song comes from Tim McEwen from The Midnight. Check out their new album, Syndicate. Our spoiler bumper and weekly plugs music comes from Noah Ross, who also edited this episode, with video assistance provided by Kurt Mega and John Barry. Next week on the podcast, it's going to be Scream 7. really curious how this one's going to turn out, especially after the extremely unfortunate decisions made behind the scenes. But we'll be discussing it here on the Filmcast. Until then, see you later.